Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Autism and Scouting Radio, your source for acceptance, enrichment, inspiration, and empowerment within the Autism and Asperger's Scouting communities. Our show will be starting shortly. To listen to archives of previous broadcasts, visit www.autismempowerment.org and click on the Autism and Scouting or Autism Empowerment Radio tab. As a nonprofit charity, we rely on public generosity to fund our programs, special events, support services, and radio broadcasting. Thank you for considering a tax-deductible donation today. Our show is now beginning.
Stop. Hello, and welcome back to Autism and Scouting Radio. My name is John Krejcha, and I'll be your host again today. Autism and Scouting Radio is part of the Autism and Scouting, which is a featured program offered by Autism Empowerment. To get more information about Autism Empowerment and our Autism and Scouting program after the broadcast, please visit us at www.autismempowerment.org and join us on Facebook and Twitter as well. If you are interested in upcoming broadcasts or listening to any of the previous broadcasts in archive or via podcast, we have that information available as well on our website. Hopefully you had a chance to hear our last broadcast. We had a very special Tiger Cub Scout talking about his adventures at his first summer camp. I personally had a blast doing it, and we hope that to have him back on again in a couple weeks. We're also hoping to have some more scouts on in our new feature called Inspiration from the Spectrum, which talks to scouts who are on the autism spectrum and talking about their challenges and their successes as well. Our guest today is Erica Sharon. Erica is a special guest. She's a mom who has three scouts, all with unique challenges and that they've had to overcome. They've had many obstacles, but they keep on going through. The obstacles that she's had to overcome are not just from the scouts themselves, but from outside sources. Through it all, Erica has not lost sight on the goals of scouting and encouraged her sons each and every step of the way. She currently serves in a variety of positions within the scouting world, including committee member, secretary, treasurer, and will soon be a merit badge counselor for animal science, veterinary science, dog care, pets, nature, and disability awareness. She's currently located in California and is part of the Empire Council, which is in the High Desert District. Welcome, Erica. Are
hi.
You there?
Yes, hi. Thank you for having me, John.
Oh, not a problem. I think you have a very unique perspective, having three scouts at three different stages on the spectrum, if you will. There are many people ask me why scouting, and that's why I like to usually start out asking our guests, why did you choose scouting as something to get your scouts involved with?
It was a combination of things. My husband's family, all the men and boys are in scouts in my husband's family, so it was just kind of natural for our boys to go with it too. But also because of the moral basis that scouts provides compared to other children's organizations. Our children are involved in scout and church activities and things like that, but we wanted the great role models of other men and gaining incredible experiences that you really can't gain in any other organization. The outdoor skills, the handworking skills, and, of course, incredible friendships that do come through scouts, too.
Pavit, the social aspect is huge, especially what we found with our oldest. The social aspect is pretty important. Now, you have three boys that are on very different paths. Can you tell our listeners about your three boys and the different paths they've had to overcome or are on in the scouting world?
Sure. Zechariah is our oldest, and he's actually almost 20, and he is still a scout. He's a star rank currently, but he's also involved in Order of the Arrow, and then Luke is our second oldest, and he just turned 18. So he has completed his scouting adventure, and now he's joined Venture Crew to be involved with that until he's 21. He's only done his first meeting, so we're still learning the ropes on that, but it looks interesting and sounds like he's going to have fun. And then our youngest is Daniel, and he has Asperger's syndrome, and he's 14, and he's also star rank and involved with Order of the Arrow. Luke has ADHD and was also star rank and in Order of the Arrow, and Zach has autism. He received the extension, which is why he's still in Scout at almost 20 years old.
A lot of people aren't familiar with the extension process. Now, can you explain the extension process a little bit and about that and how that all works?
Certainly. The Scouts do provide a process that you can apply for an extension for your child if they have a developmental disability or physical disability, and they need extra time to go further Eagle rank, or they need to have some of the merit ranks modified with different merit badges. Rather, some of the merit badges are just too advanced. You can't do a 20-mile hike if you're quadriplegic. You got to do some alterations there. So there's definitely things that can be done, and the scouting organization as a whole is willing to do those things. They just need to know what it is that needs to be modified, and that's where the parent can step in and say, we need help to do this and this and this. It starts with the scoutmaster and goes up from there, all the way up to your council. And it's just a matter of asking. And there are different requirements necessary of proving your child's disability and that kind of thing as well.
Okay, and so as far as your oldest, how did that process go for you? Did that, because I understand there were some challenges in getting him his extension initially?
Yes, it was. It was a challenge. For us, it started with our scoutmaster, who knew that the extension was available but really didn't know the process. So then from there, I went to district. And again, they knew that it was available but didn't really know the process. So onward up to council I went. And then I know that it's a volunteer organization, and I know that the people that work within the organization do change out. So everyone knowing all the details is not always possible. But council didn't know exactly how the extension process worked either, and that caused a real frustration for me. When their paperwork says that it's council who makes the decision on an extension, and then council's telling me that I need to talk to National Boy Scouts of America. So I called them, and I talked to the head of their special needs department, and he was a wonderful person. But then he told me it's a council decision, so I got referred back to council. So I had to play the back-and-forth game and kind of teach them what the process was after reading through the various PDF documents available and stuff on the BSA website.
But he did eventually get his extension, and he's still currently on that scouting path, right?
Exactly. It took a good 3 months of back and forth, and then sending in his diagnostic paperwork into council and getting it all squared away. And of course, you know, the paperwork shuffle and everything else. But yes, he did get the extension. It took about 3 months, like I said, but all is well. And that was 2 years ago, shortly before his 18th birthday, and now he's going on 20. We asked for a minimum of a 2-year extension. We're coming up on that 2 years, but he still needs more time, and the scouting program is more than willing to give that time if they feel the scout is actually still working toward their goals and not just hanging out. So
right.
It really takes the scout to put in their work, too. They're not going to be given a free ride.
I know there's some scout units back in the Midwest that there's like 30, 40-year-old scouts still, actively still working on their process, which, so, I mean, as long as they're still working, that's what they're looking for, correct?
Correct, exactly. They want to see the scout put forward the efforts, too. And the extensions hold true with Venture Crew, Sea Scouts, or Varsity as well. It is not specifically just the Boy Scouts that give the extension. It is through all the different organizations or groups within the organization.
No, you said that your middle son, who's 18, is now joined a venturing crew, right?
Correct.
And typically a lot of the venturing crews have, like, a speciality. Does the venturing crew that your son's going into have an area that they focus on?
You know, I'm honestly not sure. He's only attended one meeting so far, and so we're still kind of learning the ropes, too. And it is a fairly new crew also. So I think it's just all coming together at this point. I know that he and his friend that are decided to join the crew are both very excited about it and looking forward to the adventures ahead.
And your youngest is 14 and is also a Star Scout, correct?
Correct. Yes, Daniel. 14.
And how is he? How have your sons fit into the unit? Because they're all typical of the units that your sons have been in, correct? They're not special needs or specific to a particular diagnosis. They're all typical developing troops and packs that your sons have been in.
Correct. These are everyday packs and troops. We actually went through two different troops. We had difficulties and went back and forth between troops for 2 years before we really felt comfortable. So it's truly a matter of finding a good scoutmaster, leaders within the troop, as well as boys that are going to be a good fit with your child, too. And the community as a whole takes part as well, because that's the whole point of Boy Scouts, is being involved in the community. So it's for us, we ran into a few difficulties in one troop where Zek was picked on, and his brother stepped in and protected him, as brothers should. But there was a status situation, too, of a financial status situation with the troop. So it just wasn't a good fit, so we moved on. And that's, again, really the thing, is finding the good fit, a scoutmaster and other leaders that are understanding and willing to learn if they don't understand yet, but they're willing to learn your child's difficulties and get to know your child and you. Also, a scoutmaster that's willing to listen to the parents, but also not let the parent coddle or take over, either coddle their child or take over their child, give the boys some independence, because that's really what's needed. That's, again, one of the reasons for Scouts, is for boys to become men and to learn those independent skills.
Absolutely.
So it's a good balance. There has to be a balance.
Now, there's a lot of talk. We talk a lot about behavior issues versus sensory issues and how a lot of times they can manifest themselves looking the same, and how a lot of times leaders, especially Scout leaders that don't have a specific training to look for those types of things, have issues. Have you ever came across that where, you know, one of your sons was actually having a sensory issue, but it was kind of treated as a behavioral issue?
Exactly. Like that? Yeah, I've seen it with my own sons, as well as up at summer camp or camperies and things like that with other kids as well. The leaders need to understand the difference between a sensory meltdown and a behavioral issue or a temper tantrum that boys will have, you know, of all ages, and it does happen out of frustration. But with a sensory issue, it's obviously different, and it's the cause is different. It's not because of a child wanting their way. If a child is sensorily overwhelmed, they really don't understand why they're reacting the way they are, or it's really the only way they know how to react to a situation that's completely overwhelming.
Right, absolutely. One of the things that I think you have familiarity with is something called the Lone Scout Program, where a scout is kind of on his own, not really attached to one particular unit. Is that correct?
Correct.
Because a lot of people, I'm sure, out there don't have no clue what a Lone Scouter program is, and because it's a unique type of situation. Can you explain to our listeners a little bit about that and how it kind of played into your story?
Certainly. We went through Lone Scouting program. I found out about the Lone Scouting program, again, doing some research on the Boy Scouts website, and found out that the program was available for scouts that are disabled and unable to be involved with a troop regularly or in some ways not at all, maybe because that interaction is just too difficult or some of the activities are too difficult. Also for people living in a very rural community where there are no scout troops available. So a boy can do the Lone Scouting program. It is available for scouts and for Cub Scouts. It's not age-dependent or group-dependent. It is a good program where the parent becomes basically the scoutmaster as well as the merit badge counselor. You do try to find other merit badge counselor sources within the council that you do live in. Like in my case, we do live very rural, and our closest scout troop is a half hour, 45 minutes away. So for us, it is a drive. We do make that drive every week, though, and stay involved. But during the time in which we could not find a troop we were comfortable with is when we used the Lone Scouting program, both for our son Daniel when he was a Cub Scout and for the two older boys while they were Boy Scouts. Again, it's a paperwork process more than anything, and getting approved by council to be a Lone Scout. It provides the opportunity for the boys to start getting merit badges and earning those ranks. All the same requirements are there as much as you're able to do in a Lone Scout program. Obviously, it's a little bit difficult to do a leadership position when there's only one boy. Or right. In our case, when we had all three of them, it was still only three boys. So some things you cannot fulfill in a Lone Scouting program. Also, as a Lone Scout, you cannot become an Order of the Arrow member because one of the requirements of Order of the Arrow is leadership position. So, again, it goes back to that. You need a group in order to be a leader. So there are some modifications that are necessary and some things that do end up being different. I don't advise the Lone Scout program long-term. If your child is capable of getting involved in a troop or a pack, to involve them as much as possible, maybe only do the Lone Scout program and attend one meeting a month with a pack or a troop in your local area, if that's all your son or daughter can handle, if involved with Venture Crew or one of the other co-ed programs. So it is available, it is useful, but it's not something that should really be used long-term unless absolutely necessary either.
Very good. And I guess with the Lone Star program, you really don't have that social component either, which is so huge for a lot of the kids on the autism spectrum. How looking at the social aspect for your boys, how have they been able to assimilate into the troops and the different packs that they've been into?
For us originally, it was difficult. For Zach and Daniel primarily, Luke is naturally more social than the other two and more outgoing, so he kind of led the way. I think it's a little bit more helpful having siblings, honestly, because Luke was kind of able to drag his brothers into some of the social aspect as a single son being involved with the troop. It might be worth having maybe an older boy, one of the older ranking boys, to help mentor and help involve a newer scout that has social difficulties or any other special needs, either a star life or a star life ranking boy to take over that leadership position and to mentor that boy and help him make the friendships that are necessary.
Your boys were pretty well accepted by the other boys, and there as far as socially, that was all okay?
In the first troop that we ended up leaving, it was not a good situation. They were left out, primarily Zach more than Luke, but you could see that Zach was always kind of left on the outskirts, and Zach is not a person to involve himself But then when, you know, he was always the last one picked for the team kind of thing, just like you often see in school. And
right.
That same situation was occurring within the troop, and it's not supposed to be that way. And the scoutmaster was not doing anything to correct the situation. In a lot of ways, he was almost encouraging it. So that's why we left that troop. It just wasn't a good fit. Our current scoutmaster always makes sure that leadership positions are rotated, that every boy gets an opportunity. And if there's situations of finer gross motor skills, like in the case of Zach, learning how to tie all those different knots took an exceptional amount of work, and we're still working on them. So, again, one of the older boys steps in and helps Zach. Now, in the case of Zach, he's actually older than that boy, but they have the physical capabilities that he doesn't have. It's a lot of teamwork, and in some ways, one-on-one between one boy that you can count on, or a couple of boys that you can count on within the troop to help those younger or newer scouts or inexperienced scouts. And that holds true whether it's a typical scout or a scout that has developmental or sensory issues or of any sort.
No, I totally agree with you. So for your oldest son, is tying knots is his biggest challenge, and that took a long time?
Yes, exactly. He is still learning the knots, like I said. But one thing that has been good is he's also challenged himself. In 2010, when we had the Centennial Merit Badges came back, he did the Carpentry Merit Badge. I mean, using a hammer and nails and saws. And when he came home from camp and told me that he had made a footstool and showed me the footstool, it melted my heart, because I know how difficult that was for him. And his dad was up at camp as an adult with the troop, but his dad did not get involved. All that dad did was explain to the merit badge counselor, look, he has autism and he has motor skills issues. And the merit badge counselor was understanding, but also he also pushed Zach and didn't help Zach until it was absolutely necessary to help Zach. So, again, it's a give and take, and it's making sure the leaders know what to do, too. Whether it's a leader of a troop or a parent that's just involved with their local troop, or a merit badge counselor up at camp or at camporees and things like that. He's also done, this year, 2011, he did the leatherworking and woodworking merit badges. Again, both involving fine motor skills and tools, and he accomplished both. So it's a matter of the scout pushing themselves a little bit. If a parent pushes, generally, the scout is just going to push back and say no. Again, whether a neurotypical child or not, boys will be boys, and they'll push back and rebel when parents want them to do something. So let the boys figure it out, and let the scout master work with the boys, and the older boys work with the younger boys, more so than the parent pushing. And I think better results will occur in the long run, too.
Right. Now, for Luke, what was his biggest success, would you say?
I think for Luke, he truly learned that he is a good leader. He doesn't necessarily always like being a leader, but he's a great leader, and it helped him learn to refine those leadership skills and learn the difference between being a leader and being bossy, which, again, all kids have a problem with. There's that stage of growth, and for him, I think it was a good learning experience. He works great with kids of all ages, and obviously with his brothers having more involved special needs than he does. So he's learned to work with those different dynamics, and in the process has learned to work with the other kids in the troop as well.
And for Daniel, what would his biggest success be, do you think?
For Daniel, it's been mostly the social issue. He's more the quiet one that sits on the outskirts. For all three of them, they've gained long-term friendships. I think that they've gained friendships that they'll have for, 20, 30 years from now, that they'll all be friends as adults, all raising their own families, and still be able to reminisce about their scouting days and all the fun that they had. And that, to me, is one of the most important things, is such a long-term, in-depth friendship. That was one of the things we wanted from scouts for our boys. And again, because in not all the troops, there's small troops and there's large troops. Ours happens to be a smaller one of about 12 boys, so the friendships can get more involved than in a troop of 30 or 40 boys, which can be quite overwhelming for a child with special needs.
I totally agree with you there. The larger troops can be overwhelming at times, in something of a smaller nature might be a better suit. It's very individualized, I think, what works best with each individual person, just like it would with anyone. How would you, like, if you had something to say to someone at council or anyone who's listening that is involved in training, what would you tell them, or what would your advice be?
The biggest thing is that the people that are involved, whether it's involved on the recruiting end of bringing new boys and girls into the different groups or on the training end, you have to understand the special needs that are out there. And these boys and girls do want to be involved, but they're afraid. They're afraid they're not going to be accepted. And afraid of the challenges, the physical challenges that are involved with the different groups. So encouragement is really, really important. Encouragement, leaders being trained in understanding the different disabilities, understanding the difference between a sensory meltdown and a behavioral situation or just a boy having a temper tantrum. Like I said, which still happens even when they're teenagers, they get overwhelmed and they'll go off the deep end. So, but it's training needs to be done and understanding and listening to parents too. But at the same time, not letting parents be too pushy either, because there are parents that do coddle their boys too much or their children too much or are afraid to let go. And I think maybe that's probably more it than maybe than the coddling is that the parents are afraid of their son doing that, you know, the swimming tests or their son going on that 10-mile hike or, you know, doing orienteering or the wilderness survival. That was a real big issue, thinking about Zach building his own shelter and staying outside overnight. Or even doing the ordeal for Order of the Arrow. That was a real big deal. But you have to let go and let the boy take that challenge too. So parents have to let go. Scout leaders need to understand, and all the volunteers that are involved in scouting from the bottom levels, you know, on up and into the president. They really need to understand the different disabilities and how they work. And a lot of them tend to kind of overlap anyway. An ADHD child has a lot of the same issues as a child with autism, as a child with Down syndrome. It's a little bit different when you get into physical disabilities like cerebral palsy or being in a wheelchair and things like that. Obviously, then there's more modifications that have to be done than just a neurodevelopmental disability. So, but again, the training needs to be there for parents and for all the volunteers involved with scouting.
I think that's one of the aspects I hear quite a bit, too, is not only do the scouts have to be trained and the leaders have to be trained, but the other parents of the scouts in the same units have that understanding as well of what maybe that scout's going through and that family's going through, because, you know, they don't have the same issues as a family that has someone with a disability.
Correct. Correct. It gets scary when, when you don't have to as a family that doesn't have to deal with developmental disabilities of any sort, and then a child does come into the scout troop who may have the sensory meltdowns because of rambunctious boys running around the room or doing a noisy craft or gets frustrated and has that meltdown because they can't tie those knots because of motor skills issues. The other parents need to understand and be willing to accept that child just as much as each one of the boys in the troop or pack and just as much as the leaders. It has to be an acceptance all the way around. So, and that's where I've run into problems too. Frankly, I've run into more problems with other families than with Boy Scout leaders and Boy Scouts in general.
Well, I really appreciate you. We have probably about 45 seconds left.
Okay.
I told you it was going to go really quick, and these really
sure.
do. I'd love to have you back on because I know you have a lot more to offer. But for right now, thank you. If there's any, you know, like 30 seconds to say anything, go ahead.
If you're questioning whether to have your boys join Scouts, Crew, Varsity, any of those, Girl Scouts, go for it. Give your kids the opportunity. That's pretty much the most I can say. Give them the opportunity to blossom. Because
Thank
you'll
you
be
so
surprised
much.
At what you see.
Oh, absolutely. Thank you again so much, Erica. And we'll definitely be hearing from you again.
Great. Thank you, John. And thank you, everyone, for listening.
You've been listening to Autism and Scouting Radio, your source for acceptance, enrichment, inspiration, and empowerment within the autism and Asperger's scouting communities. To listen to archives of previous broadcasts, visit www.autismempowerment.org and click on the Autism Empowerment Radio tab or visit our Autism and Scouting page. Thank you so much for listening.